Boquist to the front. Cut off by Doughty. Two on one with Toffoli. Doughty over the line. Final seconds of overtime. Doughty to Toffoli. Save. Crawford. Doughty loose puck. They score.
From cold and snowy Ottawa, episode number 3 of the podcast comes your way. We are in Canada this week, the LA Kings on a 3-game road trip. And given that that's the case, still wanted to bring you a new edition of the podcast, but a little bit of a different format this week. Since we're in Canada, I had a chance to catch up with a couple of former Kings who are in broadcasting here in Canada. And especially with the Kings playing Saturday night, hockey night in Canada, in Montreal, it was great to catch up with Kelly Rudy. We spoke a couple of weeks ago in Calgary, but it's especially timely. He'll be on the panel in studio on Saturday. I also talked to Ray Ferraro, former King, who has developed a really great career with TSN as their lead analyst on the World Juniors, the World Championships, and on the NHL. Talked to Ray about how he got his start in broadcasting. And then Jim and myself, there's something that is interesting about working for a team is the dynamic between you want the team to succeed, you want the team to win, but it's hard to be a homer in the year 2019. Expectations from fans are different. There's an education process. Fans want to know about the X's and O's. And a lot of times they want to know about background stories on players. So Jim and I, we talk about that on the bus after the Kings game in Toronto this week. So all that and more coming up on episode 3 of the podcast.
I told this guy where I was from. He said, oh, Canada.
15 seconds. Kovalchuk serves it to the line. Roy, a shot, save, rebound, score! Tyler Toffoli with a game tying goal. 7 seconds on the clock. 1-2-1-2.
Mic check. 1-2-1-2. I think the way I was found from the Canadian TV executives, we were playing LA. We were playing in Minnesota when they were still the North Stars in the old Met Center. And Rob Stauber was playing that night. I'm backing up, and I was the first intermission guest on KTLA and with legendary broadcaster Stu Nahan. And Stu and I had a long interview. I bet it must have been 7 minutes. And he and I always had great chemistry. And the executives from Hockey Night, they were watching that. And so they told me, there's a couple of them, different ones, including Ron McLean. He was watching as well. And he said, they all kind of agreed that if there's ever a chance, they might ask me to give it a shot. And so they did. And here I still work today because of that one interview, that one night.
So, Kelly, what makes a good analyst?
Well, that voice you just had, that's pretty good. You had the broadcaster voice going there. You know, I think that number one thing is you have to watch a ton of hockey and you have to be willing to share your opinion. Whether people like it or not, you have to be able to dissect a play, tell the people what you really think about it, and live with it and own it. And I think that's one of the biggest things for people starting in the industry. You have to own it, and you have to stand up there and look as though you're certain of what you're saying.
Yeah. And you went into television right after playing. That's not as easy as it seems, because TV is a job unto itself that requires the research and preparation. It's very different than playing.
Entirely different. And you know, you think of playing hockey and talking hockey, you'd think there's some similarities, but there's nothing similar other than it being live. That's the one thing that translates. But when you're, as you know, in television, it's an entirely different field than playing hockey. And so I had to learn on the fly. Not only that, I had to learn on the fly in the biggest show in the world, Hockey Night in Canada. So it was a unique experience, and I cherish every moment. You know, I go back many years ago when I first started with Hockey Night in Canada, and I was like, why me? Like, I didn't ever have to audition. I didn't ever have to start off at a regional level or something. And I'm dumbfounded often about how lucky I was.
You have a bit of a balancing act, too, in multiple levels.
Yeah.
because you do regional television
yes.
for a team, but then you're also on the biggest show where right. the expectation is to right. come out and say something profound that yeah. may not be the most agreeable opinion. Yes. How do you balance that?
Yep, and they're two entirely different jobs again. Doing studio work, you have to look at the game differently than you do as a color analyst. And so you think about the game differently. As an example, you know, it's Tuesday here in Calgary, and we're doing a game between the LA Kings and Calgary Flames. And so that's top of mind, yet there's another part of my brain that I'm already thinking about Saturday. Like, what can I grab from this game that might resonate on a Saturday night to Canadian hockey fans across the country? And so you're always trying to juggle different things and have different opinions about what's going on in the game. And one of the things that you really have to, I think, get over is the criticism that you're going to face, because there's lots of it. And whether it's at a regional level or a national level, you're going to get hammered by people with what they think. And I think to a certain degree, I was kind of lucky in that being a goalie, you get a lot of criticism. And so I remember many times during a game getting booed, and it's not a very good feeling. And so, but you kind of understand, okay, well, people, you know, they're going to hate you at times. And so the same when you're doing television, you have to accept the fact that some people are going to like you and some won't.
What attracted you to television? Because you had a successful playing career. You didn't have to go into TV, yeah. and yet you're here and you're still here.
Yeah, that's an interesting view. I've never really thought much about that, but I think I go back to my days as a New York Islander. I was really, really shy growing up, like really painfully shy. I was a really good listener, but I didn't talk much. And when I became a New York Islander, and with all the media there, I really started to enjoy the idea of being interviewed. And not only myself, but I love watching hockey. And not all players do, as you know. Some players, I think it's about a 50-50 split. Some guys like to watch, some don't. No right or wrong answer. But I used to watch not only the games, but I love the intermissions. And so I'd focus on the interviewer and then the players being interviewed. And I thought, you know, there's something I think I could really sink my teeth into. And so when I was interviewed, I tried to be thoughtful and give different opinions than somebody else, not throw anybody under the bus, but, you know, share maybe a little bit more than other people were willing to share. And I think that's why I was noticed at some point during my career.
Our thanks to Kelly Rudy for a couple of minutes of his time a couple weeks ago in Calgary. I also had a chance, since we were in Toronto, to chat with Ray Ferraro, who was doing the game for TSN that night, about his experience as a TV analyst, his journey starting out, as well as what makes a good analyst in his mind. So, Ray, how did you get into broadcasting? Because it was not long after your playing days that all of a sudden you're on TV right in the middle of it.
Well, I actually started while I still was playing, and which is kind of a weird circumstance. I got traded from the Rangers to LA, and the head of talent, the on-air people at ESPN2 was a guy named Barry Sachs, who became a mentor to me. And he was a Rangers fan, and so he'd seen me with the Islanders and the Rangers, and I got traded to LA. And right near the end of the year, he called and said, you know, would you be interested in coming to ESPN to do the first round on the NHL Tonight? And I said, well, I've never done TV before. I don't even know how to do it. And he said, well, I've seen you do lots of interviews. I think you'd be good at this. So I went in there, and I mean, I had no idea what was going on. You know, I mean, not even a scent of what goes on to get a show on the air. And I'm sitting in this meeting, Alex, and all of a sudden they're talking about things about where the highlights are going to come in. And I got no idea what's happening. And so while I was playing in LA, my career started on television.
That's incredible. And then from there, you know, much like anything else, you climb a ladder, right? There are different ways and means that you can do it, but inevitably the target is higher level work. And now you're a fixture on TSN and on NBCSN here in the States. What was your goal when you went into this field?
You know, I was like a lot of players, I was a little bit lost when I retired. I had I'd finished in Atlanta, and you know, I got traded to St. Louis at the deadline, but I was 38 and I had just gotten divorced. And so my ex-wife was going to move with the kids back to Vancouver. So that's how I ended up in Vancouver. But I didn't have a plan. I knew that I was going to pursue broadcasting. I just didn't know what I was going to do. My first thought was I'll take the year and kind of get settled. Well, Craig Simpson left the Oilers left the Oilers broadcast booth to go to coach. So there was an opening. And I got a phone call and they said, would you be interested in auditioning? And I said, well, I've never done any games before. So I went in and we called a couple of games off tube, off the TV in an afternoon. And they said, well, we'd like to offer you the job. But I didn't even really know what that meant. And so it's funny, you know, I didn't really have a plan going in, but I knew that this came naturally. And I'm like, I think I can be good at it. I just didn't know how to be good at it. I didn't know how to get better. I didn't know what I was chasing. But it's funny when you get in it and the bug grabs you a bit, you're like, just as you said, you want to do the highest level games that you can do, whatever they are. You don't even really know what that is, but you're like, I want the next thing, whatever it is. And, you know, that's how I started doing the games, which as I found out, I liked way better than studio because you're at the scene, you're at where the action is. You're not in a sterilized environment.
To that end, and you're good, because otherwise you wouldn't be at this for as long as you have been. What makes a good analyst?
I think a couple of things. When I got hired by Barry Sachs the first time at ESPN, he told me just be yourself. And I, you know, so you got to figure out what does that even mean? What is be myself? I am who I am. But he said, you're honest and you're direct when you talk. So I've always kept that in my mind to be as honest as possible when you're doing a game. I also remember that the game is really hard. Like you will never hear me say, that player's got to do something better with the puck. Well, of course he does. He turned it over. It ended up in the net. I think my job is to say, he didn't make a very good play. He could have gone up the boards with it. He could have gone to a different spot on the ice. Like to have an opinion all the time. And it's hard to do sometimes because sometimes you'd kind of like to let the guy off the hook, but my job is not to have any attachment to it. I just watch the game. I have an opinion, and I think that's the best way to analyze.
So with the perspective of a couple of former Kings in mind, after talking with Ray, this is after the Toronto game, I walked over to the Kings bus and wanted to get Jim's take on broadcasting. 30 years now that Jim has been on the call for the LA Kings, and this is after 10 years playing here. His take on being an analyst in today's NHL. It's interesting talking with Ray and with Kelly about their starts in broadcasting, and I know you had kind of an interesting start because you were just transitioning from your playing days, and I get the sense from a lot of players that when they get in broadcasting, former players, sometimes it's by accident, that it's not an intent to go into broadcasting. Was it an intent in yours to go into broadcasting?
Never, ever, ever thought of it. I moved to community relations, which was something I was interested in, because when Gretzky had joined the team a couple years previous, all of a sudden the Kings were, you know, attractive to companies and marketers, and everyone, you know, wanted the Kings. And so then the community relations department, but then what happened was, because Gretzky had joined the Kings said, you know, the simulcast, if we split that up, we create another revenue stream. And it was just a business decision. I happened to be the guy that was around, the guy who'd just been recently retired. And that's basically how it happened.
How was that first broadcast? Because I know you are a stickler for detail. Like I can't imagine what that must have been like for you.
I think I remember my first interview. It was John Tonelli, preseason game, and I've just completely lost. I've talked about it many times before, and now I think I can talk about it a little bit more in depth. But I was completely lost, at least the first 3 years. In all honesty, there were some games at the end of the game, after the game, I did not know what the final score was.
Really?
I was so so confused by the technical aspects, by the, you know, someone talking in your ear, replays are coming up. I'm not sure, you know, I think I had a good understanding of the game, but learning to communicate that understanding is the key. And believe me, it took some trial and error. And then finally, after about 2 years in, maybe 3 years in, the Kings hired a media consultant for the organization. Hmm. So coaches, players, front office, and also the broadcasters. And what she did was she gave me a textbook. She gave me something that I could base my start out of, you know. Textbook and theory are not always the way to do things, but for me, I needed that. I needed that ground foundation.
So you went to communication school, basically.
She came to us. And wow. I will never forget it. And, you know, involved a lot of things, going over the video, transcribing every word you say, going wow. over it again just to see how you're placing thoughts and when you're... It just really helped me. And then, you know, once you get comfort, then you get confidence. And once you get confidence, then you can communicate. And certainly was not easy for me, by no means. Maybe the most difficult thing I've ever done. Now, when I look back going into a broadcast now, and I say, geez, I know exactly what to expect. I know what I'm going to do. I know it's just, you know, but that's 30 years ago.
See, and that's the one thing about doing TV. You get jargon thrown at you, you know, of replays coming up, and we're going to wipe to this and do that.
To this day, you know more about the broadcast as a whole, or the terminology that's used, the titles that certain people get on the broadcast crew. I still don't know those, and that's something I wish I would have had a formal education on, and you know, understanding. Because when things go well, anyone can do it. When things don't go well, and this is live TV, so there's mistakes made all the time, and some of them are just technical. There's not a fault of anyone. It just happens. Then you've got to learn to get through that, and that's where I think, you know, I see you and the way you interact.
Oh, don't pump my tires. Come on.
And this is talking about the entire crew and understanding, like I say, even just what's an A2, what's an A, you know, it's just all these things are just something that I had to learn, and that was more confusing too. A little experience never hurt anybody.
Yeah, I mean, you get 30 odd years at this thing now. I mean, we're taping this on the bus after the Kings lost to Toronto on Tuesday night, and you can go through and separate, almost have a detachment. And I hate using that word because, like, we're emotionally invested in this team. This is our team. We want them to win. We want them to succeed. 2 goals in 30 seconds in a game like this, you feel like crap afterwards for the team. But you almost have to detach, and the show must go on, right? Like, we still have to finish the game.
I want this team to win. I want it to be successful. I understand this year that there is, and, you know, and Todd McLellan says it all the time, we have to understand the stage that this group is in or at. And, you know, that doesn't mean you take losses and just run away. Oh, no big deal. It's a big deal every time. Having said that, as a broadcaster, I can have my best game in a Kings loss, or I can have my worst game in a Kings win. So you do have to learn how to self-evaluate your job. That's my job. My job is to try to communicate what's going on, to tell you why things have happened, and hopefully do that in a way that people can understand it. And that's... So you can do that in a game that the Kings don't win at. And you have to learn to gain satisfaction out of that. Tonight is a tough one. And I even said it during... Some ones are more difficult to take than others in this one. Because in 30 seconds, that was the game. And what I said after the game was, I think the most controlled game the Kings have played all season long.
Last one on this topic. Because I've asked Ray and Kelly, and they had an interesting take, but... In your view, what makes a good analyst?
Well, first of all, I think, bottom line, tell why and not what. You can't do it all the time because it would become too boring for an ad. You need to add some life every once in a while. You need to just have a conversation every once in a while. But to me, it is about breaking down the play and analyzing. I'm not a color man, so to speak. I think the terms have changed over the years. I'm an analyst. And maybe that fits our market a little bit better. It's not necessarily. I think it is.
Howard Cosell was a color man.
And
I mean,
yes,
that was a different era in television.
And I think we have fun. I think we have some personality that comes out. But at the same time, for me, an analyst has to tell you why. John Davidson, who is now the president of the New York Rangers, he was in broadcasting for many years. He said when he started out, and he shared this with me, he said he would tape on the monitor, his replay monitor every night, one word, why. So why did that happen? Why did the, you know, on most goals in any sport or scoring, there is a good play made and there's a bad play made on the same situation. I think another is learning to balance that out. I'm always trying to put the Kings in a positive light. But to me, once the game starts, once you go live, then everyone at home can see what we're seeing. So you can't, you know, candy coat it.
And I think something that's difficult sometimes for outside folks to understand, because it goes both ways. We both get ripped when the team does well for, you know, like, oh, you're pumping their tires. And then when they're not doing well, oh, you're ripping them, and vice versa. Like, you have to be fair, but we're Kings people. Yeah. This is our story.
Back to the start. For me, I was just coming off a year of playing. I was a homer. I was every call that was made was the wrong. If it was against the Kings, that was an awful call. Yeah. I was a complete homer. And then you just kind of learn how to get away from that. And then, in all honesty, the further you get away in time away from playing, the more objective you become. Yeah. And that's just a natural thing. I mean, when I first started, I had best friends that I'm commenting on. It's a difficult thing to do.
It's kind of the seat that Jarrett Stoll was in. And I think folks at home, you know, you can see that he still is very close with a lot of these guys. But at the end of the day, we have to call it as we see it.
If you can take away the personal aspect when you're calling the game, I think that's the way to do it. It's tough. It's very difficult. But, you know, the players know when they make a mistake probably faster than anyone else. But that doesn't mean that we have to hide that or try to hide that. You have to try to – and you know what? My philosophy or the way I'm attacking things this year is different because the expectations on the team are different. They are at a different stage. They're in a transition phase. So I'm going to, for instance, you mentioned when this is being taped, Toronto after the game. You know, after the game, I showed positive things from the Kings because I think that's a step in the right direction. There might be some years when the Kings were Stanley Cup contenders. After a loss, I would stick with the negatives. Like, this is what needs to be different thing this year. Look for the positive. Look for things they can build on.
All right, that does it for an all-Canadian edition of the podcast. We're going to go back to our usual format. We'll be taping in El Segundo next week. As always, please tag us on social media with stuff you'd love us to discuss on the podcast. We'll open it up for questions next week as we get back to playing at home and a little bit more time to discuss some things. So for now, enjoy the week. Go Kings, and we'll talk to you next week.